Welcome to the Salt and Light Podcast. Be salt and light, glorifying the Lord by your life.
Hey everybody, welcome to today's edition of the Salt and Light Podcast. I am your host, Chuck Fulkerson, joined by the Yuletidicious Annie Fulkerson.
Festive?
Yuletide-ishious. You know, I figured I would take the word Yuletide and turn it into an adjective for our adjective of the day. Maybe, completely made it up.
Maybe it'll catch on.
But I took Yuletide and turned it into an adjective. Yeah, hashtag just did that.
You're a literary genius.
It either sounds like an adjective that I completely created or the Greek god of Yuletides.
Last podcast was on pagan gods, so,
right, so you're in good company. Close enough. We're good there. It is the third week of Advent as we are heading into the fourth week of Advent. And we're getting ready for Christmas. And, you know, we were sitting around, and I know this is hard to believe, but the other day she was reading. I know. Hold your stunned silence and your strange gasps. No, she was reading. And you actually came up with a really great point that I thought we would talk about. But you weren't just reading. You were reading Greek.
A little bit.
Who reads Greek?
It's on my bucket list to be able to read the whole Bible in Greek.
The only Greek I know is Delta Gamma Theta Vega Rho. I know the Greek of options trading.
Options,
and that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. And I know Hierro.
Can you spell it in Greek?
G-Y-R-O.
No. Greek alphabet. Totally different alphabet.
Gamma, Y-R, Omega. Is that close? Gamma, Y, Rho, Omega.
I don't know.
I don't know the Greek word for Y. But anyway, you know, we were talking about, you know, as we head into Christmas and we prepare for Christ's birth, about the nativity story. So you had some really cool things that you wanted to talk about and bring up, and I thought it would be too neat to do a short little podcast and just kind of cover that today.
Yeah. I think when we read the, if we're reading the gospel stories of the account of the nativity or we hear them in mass, I think sometimes the things that we hear the most become so familiar, and especially with the nativity story, it's easy to fall into the trap of just like romanticizing the story and then coming up with cute little, you know, mangers and nativity, you know, like nativity sure. figures and sure. things like that. And which, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But I thought I love to look into the historical context and the history and the linguistics, you know, surrounding all of those, all, you know, all, God's word.
Especially the linguistics.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I've shared a lot of translation type stuff on the show before, and
right.
I think that this is no different. So I figured I'd go through a little bit about the readings that you'll hear, whether you go to Mass on to celebrate the vigil of Christmas or Christmas Day itself.
Okay.
And the reason for that is because when you go to, if you go to, you know, like any under the other Sunday Mass, and you go to the vigil Mass,
sure,
you'll hear the same gospel readings.
Okay.
Because it's the same, like, same
path.
Day.
Right.
Okay. All right. It's not that way on Christmas. So if you go to the Christmas Vigil Mass, or you go to Midnight Mass, or you go to Mass in the morning on Christmas Day, or you go during the day on Christmas, you will be hearing four completely different readings.
Well, I just think everybody should go to all four.
If you did, you'd get the entire account of the Nativity and the Incarnation.
There you
which
go.
Would be wonderful.
There you go.
So if you go to
everybody with kids is going no,
and I think you know they're. People mostly decide on when they're going to go to Mass based on a practical nature. Like, I have an infant. I can't go to Midnight Mass, you know? So, like, there's a practicality to,
sure.
you know.
You can. I mean, they're infants. They're just going to be in the crib. They're not going anywhere.
I mean, you can. But I'm just saying, like, a lot of people
They'll just be sleeping. I mean, they're not doing anything anyway. Yeah. Just leave.
Like, a lot. No. What?
Hashtag dad of the year.
But a lot of, you know, a lot of times, you know, when dinner is going to be served or,
sure.
you know, things like that,
sure.
sort of judge when we're, or decide for us when we're going to go to Mass. But just so that everyone is kind of aware, if you attend the Vigil Mass, on Christmas Eve, you will be hearing from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 1, verses 1 through 25. And I won't read all of these. I'll just give like a little synopsis of what it is. It's that in Matthew, that covers the genealogy, you know, all of those different names that are at the beginning of Matthew.
Yes.
To show the line that of Christ. So it shows, it gives you all of the genealogy.
David's kinship.
Mm-hmm. And then it talks about the betrothal of Joseph and Mary, which is different than an engagement. It's different than a wedding. So we'll go into that, you know, in terms of Jewish marriage a little bit later.
Okay, so betrothed is not engaged.
It's more than engaged.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll explain the Jewish wedding customs in a little bit.
Got it.
And that gospel reading also covers when the angel appears to Joseph.
Okay.
Telling him about how, actually, you know what? I'll just explain it now. So when Jewish people would get married, there was like a threefold process in order to get married. The first one was the consent or the contract. And that's when people would be betrothed. So at that point, like there would be arranged marriages, right? And the husband-to-be had to satisfy certain contractual obligations. So say like think back to like Jacob, he had to work for 7 years in order to get married, right? Well, when, you know, like the Rachel and the Leah story, so he had to work.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but that doesn't mean they weren't married. They were 100% married, but they didn't enter into the second part of the process until he was able to pay and or work to fulfill the contract.
Complete his obligation.
Correct. So the second part was the second C, and that's consummation. So that could have happened within days, weeks, or even up to years after the actual betrothal. And that's when the consummation of the marriage would happen. The third part would be the final C, which was the celebration of the marriage. And that's when we hear about, like in the Bible, like in John, for instance, John chapter 2.
Right.
We have the wedding at Cana.
The wedding at Cana. That's right? The celebration.
That's the celebration after the first two were already completed.
So they may have been, if they're betrothed, they may have been married for 6 years.
It could have been. Yeah. It wasn't always the case, but absolutely. Yeah. So when, in the Gospel of Matthew, when it's talking about Joseph and Mary being betrothed, they were 100% married at that point. But Matthew also tells us that the marriage was not consummated.
Got it.
Right? So Mary is pregnant. Joseph and Mary are betrothed. And Mary is pregnant. And this is before the consummation. So let that sink in for a second. And you're in like a Jewish honor society.
Right.
Okay. And that's why further down in Matthew, we also read that Joseph wanted to quietly divorce Mary so as not to bring shame to her house or his. Right. Because she was pregnant.
Right.
They're married. And everybody knows that the second part of the process has not been completed yet. But Joseph isn't going to go, no, 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 wait, you're not going to believe me, but this is what really happened.
Let me tell you.
Okay. All right. So that's what you're going to hear if you go to, and of course the angel appears to Joseph and Joseph takes Mary into his house because you're married, but you don't live together yet. Okay. That's like the first part of the process. So the angel says, it's okay to take Mary into your house. And Joseph does. So that's what you're going to hear.
Which also probably didn't go over well.
Not really.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, during the midnight mass, you'll hear from Luke chapter 2, verse 1 to 14, and that's the account of the census, right? A census is called. People have to go from where they're living back to their origin, the town of their origin. That's where we hear
that would be brutal if we still had to do that.
Right. So Joseph and—
You'd get a vacation away from me for a couple days.
And that, no, we would go to the original place of the father.
That's
so we
right.
would go to yours.
That's
yeah.
right. Can we go to yours?
We'd get to go to Albuquerque. That'd be fun.
That's true.
Yeah. And so we're hearing, that's the story where we hear of them traveling from Nazareth to Bethlehem. There's no room for them in the quote unquote inn, which we're going to get into.
She just made quote marks in the air with her fingers.
In the air, air quotes.
For those of you that love that.
Because we're going to get into that a little bit deeper. The angel appears to the shepherds to announce the birth of Christ with a multitude of the heavenly host, which actually means army. right? When it's translated correctly, it's an army of angels. So we think of, you know, a lot of times in art, there will be, you know, this like this picture of all these, you know, beautiful angels, which is wonderful and it's a beautiful image. But when you literally translate this, it's an army of angels.
Like they're like it's a turnout.
Yeah. This is the heavenly host. This is an army of angels that is accompanying the incarnation. Then if you wake up Christmas morning and you want to go to early morning mass, you will continue hearing from Luke chapter 2. Remember, the midnight mass ended with verse 14. The morning mass will pick up with verse 15 and go through 20. And that's the account of when the shepherds visited Christ. Okay. So the midnight mass talks about the announcement to the shepherds. And then the next morning, we're hearing about the shepherds actually heeding the angel's call and going to see the Christ child.
Right.
And then during the day on Christmas Day, you'll hear from John chapter 1, verse 1 to 18, which is my favorite part of the Bible. And that's John's count, you know, in the beginning was the Word.
Was the Word.
Mm-hmm. And that's John's account of the incarnation. So you can see like the development of, you know, there's the historical aspects, the theological aspects, you know, all of these beautiful passages from the Bible that are laid out for us from Christmas Eve until Christmas Day.
I never realized it was four different Gospels that were read on over Christmas. I never knew that.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And it's like that every year. So you can, you know, read it with your family if you're not, most people aren't going to go to all four Masses. So, you know, but sit down and read them with your family.
I think
family.
The only people that go on all four Masses are called priests.
The priests. Yeah, priests, maybe deacons.
Or popes.
There you go. The thing that I thought was really interesting was when we read about or hear about the account in Luke, which is the only place that we hear about this, the account of the Annunciation and the Visitation,
right?
And there's a whole reason for that about who Luke was and his interaction with the Blessed Mother and all this stuff. But we can save that for another podcast. But when it talks about the fact that there's no room for them in the inn.
So it's like when I think of the inn, I think of like Tom Baudet. We'll leave the light on for you at Motel 6.
Motel 6, yeah. Except that's...
Or an inn is like the inn of the prancing pony in Lord of the Rings, right? Like you have a cask of ale downstairs, and then you sleep upstairs, right?
Yeah.
When I think of an inn, that's what I think of.
Right, and that's actually not at all what the translation is in the Bible. So when I was looking into this and looking at the terminology that's actually used in the Greek, the word inn Greek is pandohio.
That's exactly what pandohio. I thought it was.
Okay, so when you think of an inn, like the Prancing Pony, you know, a place that where you would, you know, pay, where there's rooms and that kind of thing, that is the word for inn. There's also a word for hotel, which is, I'm probably butchering the Greek, I'm trying really hard, but it's sanadohio.
So Panadohio is an inn.
Mm-hmm.
Sanadohio is a hotel.
Yeah. Senodohio.
So Panadohio has beer is what you're saying.
Senodohio is, maybe.
Okay, that's what I care about. Senodohio
is hotel and Pandohio is inn.
Got it.
So what is the word that's used for inn?
It's not either one of those?
It's not. The word that's used is katalima.
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 Got it.
So there's no room for them in the katalima. Now, why would they use a different word? Well, if you go again to Mass on the Vigil, you're going to be hearing from Matthew. Now, why did they travel from Nazareth to Bethlehem?
The census.
They were going, Joseph was returning back to
his birthplace.
Right. Okay. Matthew goes through a lot of trouble to spell out the entire lineage at the beginning of the Gospel of Matthew.
Right, to show that Joseph came from the line of David.
Correct. Okay, that's not insignificant. Joseph is of the line of David, okay? He's kind of a big deal. He's going back to the place where he probably still has family, right?
So it's like a Kardashian.
No. I don't even know what to do with that.
I'm just kidding. But anyway, people know him, right?
He's
know
a big deal.
He comes from the lineage of David, and that's a big deal in ancient Jerusalem or ancient Israel.
Yeah, and we see all throughout the Old Testament how important not only Jewish honor is, but Jewish hospitality. Think about the parables Jesus told in the New Testament and then all the examples that we have of the prophets being welcomed into people's homes, how important it was for people to have a space, whether it was being used or not, but it was ready. You were ready to receive a prophet. You were ready to receive guests. All throughout the Old Testament, we have examples of how the owners of the house wouldn't wait for people to come to them. They would see people coming and they would go out of their houses, meet those people, bring them in, feed them, give them a place to sleep, right? So Jewish honor and hospitality are a big deal.
It
was like that when we were growing up, and now we saw that comedian who talks about the difference between receiving guests 20 years ago and now.
20 years ago, the doorbell rings.
Break out the Entenmann.
20 years ago, the doorbell rings. You're like, we have company. It's going to be amazing. Now the doorbell rings. You're like, everybody down.
Yeah, army crawl. Don't let them see us, right? Well, so in ancient Jewish times or first century Jewish times, for all intents and purposes, again, the honor society, the hospitality society.
They wanted guests. They honored guests. They were happy to have
guests. That's a big deal, especially with a man as influential as and as important as Joseph.
Sure.
Okay. So in that context, Joseph and Mary have traveled at least 69 miles. That's the distance as the crow flies from Nazareth to Bethlehem.
So
on a donkey.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's been a while.
It's a long time. And Mary's about to give birth. So you're pregnant. You're on a donkey for 70 miles through the desert. And you show up at your family's house. Now, it's Christmas time. We're going to be traveling, right, to family. I'm sure lots of people listening are traveling to family. You don't turn people away. You find a couch. You find a corner of the floor. You do everything you can to make people feel comfortable, right?
Right.
Okay. So when Joseph shows up and says,
hey, can I come in?
Hey, he shows up with his betrothed who is pregnant. And people know this. And now suddenly there's no room for Joseph at the Katalima.
Right. So no room means you're not welcome.
Exactly.
You can go sleep with the donkeys.
Yeah. Now, what does katalima mean? In the literal Greek translation, it means accommodation. Okay. The other places that it's used in the Bible is in 1 Maccabees. It talks about a room for the Gentiles. But then more importantly, the one I want to focus on is when Jesus asks the apostles to go and prepare a place for the last Passover. And they celebrate the last Passover in the
upstairs, right?
The upper room, yeah.
The upper room, right.
Exactly. He says, you will meet a man and tell him your master sent you and to prepare a place in the upper room.
Right.
Okay. The word that is used in the gospel is katalima.
Oh.
So Jesus tells the apostles, you're going to meet a man. You go tell him that you need to prepare the Passover in the katalima. The way a first century Jewish house was typically set up was mostly as just a shelter. Like, people didn't spend as much time in their houses as we do now, right? We fit as much house onto a tiny postage stamp as possible with new building construction these days.
Sure.
In ancient Jewish times,
you can like lick your neighbor's windows if they need them cleaned.
Totally. You could share your internet and pass the sugar through the window.
Right.
So it wasn't like that
sugar.
It wasn't like that. They had a roof area, which we hear in the Gospels how the friends of the paralytic man cut a hole in that roof and lowered the man into to see Jesus. There was a small room it was like the living quarters where the women would work or dye fabric or there was metalworking or whatever they happened to be doing at the time. And they also slept there. There was, it was like one room. Okay.
A great room kind of thing.
Yeah, kind of like a great room. They slept there. They worked there. That's what they did when it came to indoor work. There was also another room that was where they did a lot of like the cooking. And then there was that rooftop area. And then there was a room for the animals, which typically was put across from the kitchen and next to that great room. So you're looking at like a box where you enter in through this, like they called it like the court. And the animals would be on one side, the kitchen would be on the other, in the back would be that like great room sleeping area, and then you'd have the rooftop. Then you would have the katalima. So that was your place, that was your extra room that was just meant for guests.
Okay.
So if we think about this historically and what that word actually means, the katalima was it was like a generic word for room or lodging, accommodation, quarters. Okay, that's the like the literal translation of this. So when Joseph approaches and they say there's no room for you in the katalima, but you can go sleep with the animals,
well, that's not very nice.
Right. So there's not necessarily no room at the hotel and, oh, you have to go out, you know,
there's
with the shepherds.
There's no room for you.
There's no room for you.
And you're betrothed.
Yeah. And again, this is from, you know, we won't know until, God willing, we all, you know, make it to heaven and, you know this for certain. But a certain... There's a book called Life with Mary, and it accounts some of the apparitions, the stories and the apparitions from certain saints, and this is consistent. What Mary told some of these saints is consistent with these translations. So, which is sort of, well, I think is really kind of interesting. But anyway, so I think that story to that interpretation to me makes it so much more deep and rich, you know, than, well,
you know, I've never seen a movie. I know there's been a number of movies created around the Nativity, right? Between, and I think they just released one this year, The Star, right? That was through the animal's perspective, which I find interesting. But I've never seen a movie about the Nativity. Is it ever presented that way in the movies about the Nativity?
I don't think so. I've never seen it put that way. And
I've never even thought of it that way until you brought this up.
Yeah. And I think that it illuminates a deep spirituality and spiritual preparedness of the Blessed Mother and Saint Joseph. In that the profound humility that they had to, you know, experience by the grace of God, I think it's lost sometimes when we just hear the gospel readings and take them at face value and see the, you know, the cute cartoons about the Nativity and, you know, things like that. Like, put yourself in that perspective, you know? Now you are... trying to as a man, you've just traveled 70 miles with your pregnant wife.
And
you
now
know
no
that
one's
she's
letting you in.
No one's letting you in. Think about how that makes you feel. You're the provider. And then there's the Blessed Mother, right? Surrounded by the angels, knowing that she's carrying the Son of God and knowing what people are thinking about her. How does that make you feel as a woman?
You know, right.
And how can we imitate that humility, knowing what God called Mary to do? And how many times are we put in that position where we're doing our darndest to do the will of God, but other people, you know, are we worried about what other people are thinking or not? You know?
Right.
Mary put her head down. She knew what other people were saying about her, but she knew that She gave her great fiat, her assent to do the will of the Father.
Uh-huh.
So I think we can, if we understand the rich contextual nature of the stories. We can take so much more out of them to try and imitate, you know, the most holy of all created beings, Mary, you know, the greatest of all the saints, and Saint Joseph, who I think sometimes doesn't get enough credit.
No, I don't think it's anywhere near enough credit.
Yeah.
There's no, after the nativity, where is he mentioned again?
Yeah, I mean, certainly not as much as the Blessed Mother. And even sure. Even she's not, you know, listed or talked about, you know, all that much. But when she is,
it's
we
important.
Need to understand,
right.
You know, the context and the translations and, you know, what was happening around it to really understand the significance of you know, of her.
Excellent.
So that's it.
Well, speaking of Christmas, let's put a bow on this one.
We will.
Hey, real quick before we go, if I could just remind everybody, we are... I say we very loosely. I am running a marathon in January, and we really, really, really would like to support. We'd really like to support local to our Kingwood area. At least they were at one point. The Henderson family and their missions. So any help would be so appreciated. The website is GoFundMe.com/IIEfinancial. Trying to run to kind of raise awareness and raise some funds for this great family that all they do is live off the generosity of others. So anything will help. I don't care if you give them $2, it will help. And it goes a long way into what they do and spreading the word of God all over the world. So that's a lot.
All right. We will see you next week with a very, very, very special episode. We wish you all a most blessed Christmas and the rest of the Advent season. And yeah, that's it.
All right.
St. Anthony the Abbot.
Pray for us.
Peace be with you. And see you next week.
You've been listening to the Salt and Light Podcast. Be salt and light, glorifying the Lord by your life.